Let me mention a couple of announcements before I get started this morning. The teens are leaving for Winter Jam at 3 p.m. today. Don't forget there is prayer partners. We have been knocked out of it because of the weather for the last time, but it will happen this Tuesday night at 7:15. Remember, the annual business meeting is coming up the first Sunday in February. We have that at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, the first Sunday of February. Also, there is a board meeting next Saturday evening at 6 o'clock in preparation for that annual business meeting. I want to begin by reading a passage of Scripture out of Esther. Esther is the only book of the Bible where God's name is not mentioned, but where his footprints and fingerprints are in every page. Book of Esther, the story of the Book of Esther is a lot like our times. A sinister Hitler-like character named Haman arises out of nowhere and is able to get legislation, if you will, law passed through. This is a dictatorial government, but he's able to convince the king and get this legislation to annihilate the Jewish race. 9 months later, on a date in March, this annihilation will take place. Mordecai, because he is a government official, he is the second most important character of the book. He has raised his cousin as his own daughter, Esther, and she, by the miraculous sovereignty of God, has wound up in this place of protected luxury as the queen. But she is protected and she knows nothing about what is happening in her country. She lives in this place of Susa where she is born. But Mordecai has his feet on the ground. He knows what's happening. He knows that the Jewish race is going to be completely wiped out. So he goes to Esther and solicits her help. She is fearful. But the words of Mordecai to Esther are inspiring. Not only did they inspire Esther to do what she did and ultimately is successful in turning the tables so that Haman winds up hanging on his own gallows that he had built for Mordecai and the Jews, and the Jews are not annihilated. Incidentally, there have been Holocaust of the Jews planned all through history. At least 6 or 7 of them have planned to wipe out the Jewish race. They will not be wiped out. They're God's people. There have been plans to take over that land of Israel in the past. There is plans right now. There are countries in the Middle East declaring they will annihilate the Jews and take that land. They will not. It's God's land. It's God's people. They will not succeed. I want to read a passage of Scripture, Esther chapter 4, beginning at verse number 4, with the background that I just gave you. This passage, we'll pick it up there. When Esther's maids and eunuchs came and told her about Mordecai, she was in great distress. She sent clothes. He happens to be outside. Sorry for interrupting, but he's outside. He won't come in the palace because he has sackcloth. That's what you did in that time when you were in great distress. She sent clothes for him to put on instead of his sackcloth, but he would not accept them. Then Esther summoned Hetak, one of the king's eunuchs assigned to attend her, and ordered him to find out what was troubling Mordecai and why. So Hetak went out to Mordecai in the open square of the city in front of the king's gate. Mordecai told him everything that had happened to him, including the exact amount of money Haman had promised to pay into the royal treasury for the destruction of the Jews. He also gave him a copy of the text of the edict for their annihilation, which had been published in Susa, to show to Esther and to explain it to her. And he told him to urge her to go into the king's presence and to beg for mercy and plead with him for her people. Hetak went back and reported to Esther what Mordecai had said. Then she instructed him to say to Mordecai, "All the king's officials and the people of the royal provinces know that for any man or woman who approaches the king in the inner court without being summoned, the king has but one law that he be put to death. The only exception to this is for the king to extend the gold scepter to him and spare his life. But 30 days have passed since I was called to go to the king. When Esther's words were reported to Mordecai, he sent back this answer. These are these immortal words spoken so many years ago, which will speak to us today if we let them. Do not think that because you are in the king's house, you alone of all the Jews will escape. For if you remain silent at this time, relief and deliverance for the Jews will arise from another place, but you and your father's family will perish. And who knows but that you have come to royal position for such a time as this? Then Esther sent this reply to Mordecai. Go, gather together all the Jews who are in Susa, and fast for me. Do not eat or drink for 3 days, night or day. I and my maids will fast as you do. When this is done, I will go to the king, even though it is against the law. And if I perish, I perish. Well, that's one of the most inspiring passages in the Bible. I love the story of Esther. But I don't plan to speak on that. I only wanted it to introduce to you the topic for today. I feel like we are living in one of the most perilous times that has ever come to the United States of America. We are faced with such a time as this. The men that I admire and have been role models to me for all of my ministry, and I'm talking men I only know through their public ministry, I don't know them personally, men such as James Dobson, men such as Chuck Swindoll, I could go and give you a list, such as Ravi Zacharias. If you listen to Christian ministry, all of those men have either filed lawsuits or have made a public acclaim that they are planning on disobeying the law, facing huge penalties, or going to jail. Every single one of these great Christian ministries today are being threatened by our government to face huge penalties or go to jail because they are being forced to say they will pay for abortion. Now, why does abortion have to be the central issue of this government? I hope you will find the answer, at least some evidence to support the answer, why abortion is so important to this government. Abortion became legal in the United States in 1973. The Supreme Court justice at that time was a man who was convinced that abortion needed to be the law. His road to the Supreme Court led him to believe that it was his time for history. And he found that the Constitution of the United States, in both the 14th Amendment and the 9th Amendment, gave the right to abortion. He found it in the right of privacy. As the court put it, it gave that right to the woman exclusively. It gave no right to the father. In fact, the court said that it could find no interest of the father in the fetus and the welfare equal to the mother's protected liberty. So far as the court is concerned, men have no rights whatsoever with respect to their progeny or their offspring. The so-called right to privacy, as the court said in Roe, is broad enough to encompass a woman's decision whether or not to terminate her pregnancy and terminate the father's rights as well. Today in America, 40%, now listen to this, 40% of all births are out of wedlock. And 24% of mothers raising the kids without a father. Women are found responsible for the pregnancy, but not just the pregnancy, but for raising this child. Abortion actually is so much broader than a decision whether or not to terminate the pregnancy, but about whether or not she will be able to raise this child, because in so many of these cases, the father is absent. And even if he is there, he doesn't have a legal voice at all. A 2004 study by Guttmacher Institute, what happens to be a pro-abortion institution, organization, it asked over 1,200 women why they obtained abortions. The overwhelming answer, almost 75%, said, "I can't afford a baby now." That's the answer. That's the reason. The overwhelming reason that we are told that abortion exists today is that it empowers women. If the Supreme Court supports the woman's right to choose, biology mandates abortion only be performed on women, and women are increasingly being abandoned by men in this child-rearing process, why should men have any say at all? Actually, I'd like to take just a moment, something that I haven't spoke about in the last few years. We know that there are women who have great regret about abortion. I have shared much of the response of that, overwhelming regret, even though Planned Parenthood and the pro-abortion movement say there is no regret. Those are lies that actually happen. In fact, before I go any further, let me begin with, first of all, I'm gonna have them bring up a website here called liveaction.org. If you have access to a computer, I'm going to ask you this next week to go to this website, and I want you to watch some of these videos. I can't show most of them here just because it's not appropriate for this congregation. But bring up the tab so I can see the names of the videos. It's under investigation. You click on investigations. I can't read it from there. I should have wrote it down. Read them off to me. What's that say right there? Okay. I'll just turn around here. I can read it. Thank you. Okay. I forget we got screens in the back. Under every one of these titles, I will tell you, I watched all these videos. It takes several hours. And you will either weep or sit there and be absolutely stunned as you read these, as you watch these videos. Under this title of Inhuman Late Abortion, I cannot believe that our society in the United States of America, actually, these are all authentic videos where people have gone in undercover, and these are all filmed. It actually tells you how many babies are being born live. They're being born live and murdered outside the womb, which is illegal, but this government isn't interested in prosecuting that. That's happening. It's happening on a larger scale than we can even imagine. Planned Parenthood even tells mothers what they need to do in case that happens. They'll take care of the baby if the baby is actually born while they're in the hotel waiting to come. The sex selection. They go in undercover and they say, we actually want a boy, we don't want a girl. Sex selection abortion is happening in this country. Child sex trafficking, a pimp, someone posing as a pimp, and with one of the girls, underage girls, 13, 14, goes in, and they're more than willing to take care of them. They tell them how they need to talk and how they need to approach so they won't have any problem. These are all laws that would be broken, of course, and the Planned Parenthood would have to respond, but they don't. Statutory rape. They go in and say that the father's 31 years old, and they tell them not to say that. They tell them what to say. Racism. They call in and say, I want to pay for abortions for just minorities, and they're willing to accept the money. These are shocking, shocking videos, and I challenge you to watch them. Let's watch the one that says Mama Sham, because this is about a sham in Planned Parenthood.
Thank you. What's going to happen as a result of this, if this bill would ever becomes law, millions of women in this country are going to lose their health care access, mm-hmm. not to abortion services, to basic family planning, mammograms.
Hi, Samantha. I have a quick question. I was hoping that I could come into Planned Parenthood for a mammogram. Do you guys provide mammograms?
We do not provide mammograms. Let me give you a number to one of Family Health Centers, because they're going to be able to advise you a little better than I am, because we don't deal with the health side of it so much. We're mostly a surgical facility.
Thanks for calling my
cell phone here. Hi, I just talked to Samantha, I think at your Georgetown clinic,
uh-huh.
and she said to talk to you guys about services with mammograms, that you guys provide mammograms.
We don't hear.
Is there any way that I can come in for a breast exam and a mammogram?
Okay, well, unfortunately, we do not offer, the mammogram.
Thank you for calling Planned Parenthood. How can I help you?
Does Planned Parenthood provide mammograms of some sort?
We do not.
And I'm hoping I can come in, to get a mammogram. Does Planned Parenthood provide those?
We don't.
We don't do mammograms here, though.
We don't offer mammograms?
No.
Do you provide mammograms?
No, I'm sorry, we don't.
No, ma'am, we sure don't. You can try, Christ Community Service.
Does Planned Parenthood provide mammograms?
We don't provide those services. I can give you a referral who does.
Okay, like another clinic? Because I'm in Tucson, but I'm willing to travel to another clinic.
Well, it would be at a different agency altogether, because we don't provide those services whatsoever.
What's going to happen as a result of this, if this bill would ever becomes law, millions of women in this country are going to lose their health care access,
mm-hmm.
not to abortion services, to basic family planning, mammograms.
That's just an example of the perpetual lying. This was in response by Planned Parenthood to members of Congress wanting to take away money, federal money, because we give billions of dollars to Planned Parenthood, our tax dollars, which the central thing that Planned Parenthood does is abortions, millions of them across the country. And since the big prosecution in Philadelphia, where the abortionists had literally performed abortions and murders on live babies. He even cut the little feet off as trophies and had them kept in jars. There has been attention to want to take away money, so they came on and said women are going to lose all their basic health care, which is a lie. There is no basic health care offered at Planned Parenthood. That's just an example of the deception. One of the things that is doesn't enter most people's minds is that how men are so affected by abortion. Incidentally, in preparation for this, I read and extensively in quoting from a book by Brian Fisher. Brian Fisher, I recommend it, and the title of the book is Abortion, the Greatest Exploitation of Women. Abortion, the Greatest Exploitation of Women by Brian Fisher. In there, one of his colleagues who works with him early on, he and his wife had an abortion. I read to you his own words. He said, "I hid and suppressed the realization that the only reason our oldest daughter was not alive today was due to my own cowardice. I went to my wedding pretending to be an upright, moral young man with my bride dressed all in white. She was beautiful and we looked great on the outside. No one could see the brokenness we were both hiding so well. We had aborted our first child just a few months before. For 15 years, I was too ashamed to tell anyone what I had done except my best friend. My wife and I never talked about it, and we did not grieve together, and we hid it deep in the recesses of our minds. Our marriage began to unravel, and through extensive counseling, we realized how much our struggle had come down to the decision to end the life of our first child. We began to deal with our own shame and guilt. We realized the extent of the mental and emotional trauma it had caused. There were many levels: resentment, a lack of forgiveness, feelings of abandonment, all revealed as we dealt with the reality of this decision many years earlier. Now, as a father of four beautiful children, and through God's grace, my wife and I are healing and have been married 20 years. However, there is not a day that goes by that I do not regret my decision. After all, any good father would jump in front of a train to save the life of his child. The life of our first daughter, Sarah, would not have been any different. Not every story has a sad ending, though some are more ironic than others. I never walk in front of the arch or drive in view of the arch without distinctively turning to look at the old courthouse. And as soon as I see the old courthouse, I am reminded of the history that took place in that courthouse. In 1857, the Dred Scott case took place in our city. And the Chief Justice, Taney, wrote about his ruling. We cringe because he said that the African Americans were regarded as being of an inferior order and altogether unfit to associate with the white race, either in social or political relations, and so far unfit that they had no rights which the white man was bound to respect. I'd like you to let that sink in for just a moment. The Supreme Court Justice of the United States wrote the majority opinion of that case. It happened because they did not have their own home at that time, and it was a traveling court. It ruled in this city. And he said that the African-American race was so inferior to the white race that they were not to be regarded as persons. So we cringe, and I hope you do, because racism is sinful. And when you hear a racist joke, I hope it offends you. It does me. We cringe at the odious racism of Chief Justice Taney's ruling, but the verbiage and tone of that case are strikingly similar to the tone of Roe versus Wade, the case that made abortion legal in the United States is based, or we are told about the reasoning behind it from Chief Justice Harry Blackmun. He said that the unborn were not persons. Just as Chief Justice Taney said that the black race were not persons, he said, Harry Blackmun says the unborn are not persons. It's an eerie echo of the Dred Scott. Roe denied legal protection to the unborn because, as the court concluded, the word person, as used in the 14th Amendment, does not include the unborn, according to this Chief Justice. The 14th Amendment was adopted in 1868 and declares no state shall deprive any person of life, liberty, or justice. Incidentally, 1868, after there were 600,000 soldiers lost in a war to get that 14th Amendment. No state shall deprive any person of life, liberty, or property without the due process of law, nor deny to any person within its jurisdiction equal protection of the law. If Justice Blackmun, the author of Roe, had been willing to recognize the personhood of the unborn, and if they're not persons, what are they? He would have had to rule the other way, as he admitted. If this suggestion of personhood for the unborn child is established, the fetus' right to life would be guaranteed by the 14th Amendment. But Blackmun goes on to say, the controversy of when life begins has never been settled by theologians or philosophers, and he, as a Chief Justice, wasn't about to get into the controversy. So as far as he was concerned, they were not persons. But if you open up any simple science textbook, it will tell you when life begins. Here is a definition from a medical textbook. Human development begins at fertilization when a male sperm unites with a female ovum to form a single cell called a zygote. This is the definition of life. So these little people are actually not babies. In some of those videos that I recommended that you watch, you'll see how the people at Planned Parenthood are trained. Do not use the word baby. You will have a client that will ask you, what is this? When does it become a baby? It is just a growing mass. It's a cell. It's a fetus. It's an embryo. They tell them, do not use the word baby. They will want to know if this is a baby. It's not a baby. Not far from where I was raised, near Fresno, California, 2 hours from there is a city called Merced, within the San Joaquin Valley. Back in 2003 and 2004, a particular case took the airwaves and dominated the news almost every night. Because in that city of Merced, a heinous crime was planned and executed somewhere between Merced and San Francisco, 2 hours away. Because on April 13, 2003, the body of a late-term male fetus washed up on the shore of San Francisco Bay. One day later, the partial body of his mother washed up a mile or so away. Though the exact cause of death was never determined, it was concluded that the mother, Lacey Peterson, was murdered by her husband, Scott. Scott was charged and convicted with first-degree murder in the death of his wife. But now listen to thee. He was charged with the first-degree murder of his wife. He was also charged with the second-degree murder of the death of his unborn son, Connor. Oh, isn't that amazing? So, that same year, President Bush signed into law what is called the Unborn Victims Violence Act. Because there had been several cases, this being the first, there was another in Oklahoma and several others, where the perpetrator was charged with murder of his wife, or in Oklahoma as it was in a traffic accident, and also with the life of this child. So we actually, this law is on the books, but we have two opposing laws that contradict and oppose each other. So, in the case of Scott Peterson, he is charged with the murder of his son, this little baby that's in his wife's womb. But she could have murdered the child and there would have been no crime. Amazing. Absolutely amazing. So how did we get abortion? Well, first of all, we got abortion because over a period of time, people like Harry Blackmun, who is very much like the present administration, were obsessed with abortion. But organizations like Playboy, Hugh Hefner, poured millions of dollars into getting us abortion. His magazine that began in 1953 began spreading the news of sexual liberation. And in 1965, he began to lobby extraordinarily heavy for abortion, calling as a way for women to be freed. Now, it freed women, all right, but it definitely freed the Playboy mentality. Then following that, in 1969, there was a thing called no-fault divorce, signed into law in California. Within 15 years, it swept across all 50 states. No-fault divorce. So just stop for a minute. 1969. How many remember that year? Okay, so 1969 is a little bit before Roe versus Wade, a few years before. But in 1969, law laws began to like dominoes, go across so that a couple could simply go into court and say, we don't want to live together anymore, we want a divorce. And they could be given. They didn't have to offer any reason. All they had to say is, we can't get along. Before 1969, you had to offer evidence for divorce. Was there infidelity? Was there abuse? Was this man financially spending all the money? And but after 1969, you didn't have to offer that. So what happened? Did it affect the divorce rate per 1,000 married women in the United States? More than doubled immediately. Couples living together outside marriage jumped 17-fold between 1960 and 2010. Nearly 22% of men ages 15 through 44 have 15 or more sex partners. The illegitimacy rate is now 41%. There is an estimated 20 million new STDs annually. What if pregnancy could be terminated so that sexual freedom could be maintained? And what if men had no responsibility for the pregnancy or its termination? And in the best of all scenarios, what if women actually celebrated the responsibility for pregnancy and its termination and gave men no credit, no right, and no voice in the process? Actually, abortion is the ultimate get-out-of-jail-free card for sexually aggressive men. This past year, an organization that promotes abortion called the Center for Reproductive Rights produced a video. It was actually only on the internet for a few weeks because there was such a, it was so offensive, they pulled it. But the fact that this video could actually have been created is appalling. The video showed an actor in front of a fireplace dressed in a tuxedo. Let me read it to you. The CRR Productions featured a black actor dressed in a suit before a fireplace with a glass of liquor and a rose on the table in front of him. He chuckles, leers, and says, as if speaking to Roe, "Happy anniversary, baby. Looking good for 40. His voice trailing off in a series of grunts. This is amazing. Absolutely amazing. One of the things that we are seeing is that when it comes to having any kind of surgery in the United States, for men, for women, for children, we are to be informed. We are to know exactly what is happening, except for abortion. Education seems to not be necessary whatsoever. In matters of health, America strongly encourages women to be fully educated about their bodies, how to fight illnesses, how to take care of themselves, how to protect and defend themselves. We encourage patients, male and female, to seek second opinions when diagnosed with an illness or injury that requires extensive care. 54% of women were unsure of their decision. Yet 67% received no counseling beforehand. 84% were inadequately counseled beforehand. This is according to the Elliott Institute. 79% were deceived or not told about available resources. Many were misinformed by experts about fetal development, abortion alternatives. Let me show you a video at this point about this same misinformation.
Thanks to all of you at Planned Parenthood for all the work that you are doing for women all across the country and for families all across the country.
The Virginia Beach 911. Where is the emergency?
We have a patient that's bleeding.
This is Planned Parenthood.
Planned Parenthood.
Watch her consciousness and breathing and let me know if she is unconscious or stops breathing, okay?
Okay, but the ambulance needs to come to the back door.
So they need to use the back door?
Yep.
We'll have the officers respond out to 515 Newtown Road to Planned Parenthood and they'll use the back door.
Is this Planned Parenthood?
Yes, it is.
I'm just calling about making an appointment for abortion. Has anyone been hurt? Like, has anyone had a problem after having one?
I mean, you have some cramping, you have some bleeding. You know, some people think that, you know, that sometimes you have severe cramping afterwards and try, like, a warm compress on your stomach or, you know, some ibuprofen.
But is it dangerous?
No, ma'am.
Not at all?
No, ma'am.
So I'm not going to get, like, hurt or anything at the clinic?
No, ma'am. Both of the procedures are safe and effective.
Nobody has been hurt at the clinic, right?
Correct. There's a lot of misinformation about abortions online. It's very safe, and the doctors are very skilled at what they do.
Okay. So nobody gets hurt? Or nobody's gotten hurt?
No.
With either of the procedures, has anybody ever gotten hurt?
They're both incredibly safe.
They're not in danger. They don't get, like, injured.
No, ma'am. We don't have any type of procedure where one would receive an injury.
During the procedure, I'm not going to get hurt either at the clinic.
No.
Houston Fire and Medical, what is the location of your emergency?
It's Planned Parenthood.
And what is your emergency?
We have a client here. She's in a procedure room. She may be hemorrhaging.
We are dispatching emergencies at Planned Parenthood on the third floor.
Is it safe?
Yes, it's safe.
Well, has anybody gotten hurt because of having an abortion?
Again, it's a very safe environment. It's very clean.
So no one's ever been hurt at your clinic?
No.
That's why I know that Planned Parenthood will continue providing care no matter what. I know you'll never stop fighting to protect the health care and the choices that America's women deserve.
According to the Elliott Institute, 64% of women who had abortions reported feeling pressured to abort. Most felt rushed. 67% weren't counseled or screened. For any kind of violence or pressure or coercion in their lives. And there's all kinds of coercion when it comes to abortion, from boyfriends, from fathers. Terrible coercion. You may remember just not too long ago, the state of Texas passed a 24-hour mandatory law waiting period for abortion. A pro-abortion state politician complained about the waiting period, claiming it was harmful to women, caused confusion, and put more pressure on women when they have already made up their minds. She said that the law runs the risk of manipulating women's minds. It appears that the pro-abortion advocates are afraid women don't have the intelligence or the ability to make up their mind. Apparently, women aren't very intelligent, discerning, or wise. So are the majority of women properly educated when considering abortion? The data points to a severe lack of appropriate information and counsel. Are the majority of women making independent decisions regarding abortion? No. In the majority of cases, they are heavily influenced or coerced by others, namely men. Are women capable of handling a variety of viewpoints about the abortion decision? Apparently not, as many think they are too dumb or weak to think through contrary viewpoints about abortion, a surgery that verifiably ends the life of another human being and brings potential risk. Studies are coming out from India and from China. A study just recently released from China, they have plenty of abortion experience there, increases health risk 600 times to the woman. India reports are showing the same. We don't have a lot of reporting in the United States when it comes to abortion. For instance, in Jefferson County, there were 180 women who got abortions here in Missouri. But that number is inaccurate because women can drive across the river into Illinois and get an abortion because there is no accounting for abortion in Illinois by Illinois state law. So we don't actually know how many women in Missouri just drove across the border. No doctor or hospital can perform any kind of surgery without accounting and without proper procedure, except for abortion. Why this fascination for abortion? Well, first of all, let's emphasize again over and over. We are talking about terminating the life, the human life. Now, in some of those videos, you will see the Planned Parenthood lying to the girls, telling them when the heartbeat actually happens, that they don't have a heartbeat until the 17th or 18th week, which is a lie. The heartbeat begins in the first 2 or 3 weeks of that little, tiny little baby. This is a life. And the termination of that life is a murder, a heinous crime. One of the things that has brought to light is this machine, this ultrasonic machine that performs a sonogram that actually takes a picture of the baby. The woman hears the heartbeat. When a woman has the possibility of actually having the sonogram and seeing the picture, it decreases the possibility of abortion immediately. Most women cannot go in there and take that decision to take that life. But if they are kept in the dark, if they do not know, if they are told repeatedly that this is just a fetus, it's not a human life, then they possibly can go through with it. We support locally 2 pregnancy crisis pregnancy centers, one in St. Louis called Thrive and one in Jefferson County called Hand in Hand. There are things that all of us can do. We have to be able to do something, even if it is just what each of us can do. Even just the power of one person to stand up against this gross atrocity that is happening in our nation and continues to grow more and more with more intensity with this present administration that is obsessed with pushing abortion and demanding that Christian organizations provide abortion, contraceptive. This organization is now selling the morning after pill to 8- and 9-year-old girls in school. This Obama administration has made it available in schools all across the Northeast, the morning after pill to 4th and 5th and 6th graders. This is a hard subject, one that some pastors do not preach on. I think they will stand before God and give an answer for not bringing the subject up. I dedicate one Sunday every year to this, and then I preach on it constantly throughout the year. But today, I want us I'm going to ask you to stand to your feet. I'm going to ask you to come here around the front. As you're coming, they're going to put a video on, and we're going to pray together. Dear Heavenly Father, our hearts are burdened, and they should be. How can we not feel the pain of this terrible atrocity? Forgive us, O God, for our apathy and our indifference. Forgive us for saying there is nothing we can do, for we can pray, we can speak, we can help one person at a time. We can teach our daughters and our sons, and we can stand. We are facing a time, Lord, when all of us will have to stand as never before. So let us gather strength from you, Lord, to know what it means to stand for what is right, standing for what is wrong, standing against what is wrong, and standing for what is right is all about what you call each of us to do. And like Esther, we can say, I will stand, and if I perish, I perish, but at least I stand. Let us grasp those convictions. Let us stand for you, Lord. I pray you will lead all of these organizations, all of us who face the threatening Hitler-like hand of this government who is imposing sinful, wrong laws, as wrong as Dred Scott, on all of us. Let us stand up for the right. Let us be empowered by the Holy Spirit. And let us not swerve to the right or to the left. But let us be obedient to you, I pray. In Jesus' name, amen. God bless you. Please greet each other before you leave today.